Your dreams are bigger, bolder, and more badass than the life you're living now, but something just keeps getting in the way. Join certified coach and former therapist Diane Wingert for the Driven Woman podcast. She'll show you how to get rid of whatever is holding you back so you can stop spinning your wheels and up-level your life. Get ready to hop in and buckle up. This is the Driven Woman podcast, and we're heading for the fast lane.
Well, hey there, and welcome back to All My Driven Women. Today, I am joined by guest Kate Donovan, who is a burnout expert, something that many female entrepreneurs are at risk of, especially the gifted, creative, sensitive ones among us. Kate is not only a burnout coach, she is a licensed acupuncturist, speaker, author, course creator, and fellow podcaster. Like many driven women, Kate learned about burnout the hard way by going through it. She figured out how she ended up there, how to bounce back, and now she's on a mission to end burnout culture. Hey, if we want to stay in the entrepreneurial game long enough to have a business that is profitable and sustainable, staying alert to where we feel resentment and setting healthier boundaries is a must. You are going to love this conversation with Kate Donovan as much as I did. This week's pod praise comes from Ducky Duck 64, aka Marcy, who says, "Welcome to the mind-blowing home for the ADHD professional, regardless of gender, to dive deeper into their adult ADHD journey, feel way less alone, and maybe learn a few tips along the way. Diane's having profoundly intriguing conversations, and so far, every episode I've listened to has deeply resonated in some way. So thankful to have found this pod. I really needed to hear it and feel hope." Well, and as I promised, if you are a freelancer, small biz owner, or entrepreneur, along with your pod praise, I will also shout out your business. So Marcy's business of amazing textiles you can find on Instagram, and it's called Twisted Threads Fabric. Link in the show notes. So without further delay, I bring you my conversation with Kate Donovan on burnout. Here we go. Well, I know I always say I've been really looking forward to this conversation, and I'm really excited to welcome this guest, but today it's like to the highest level. Kate Donovan is my guest today, and she is here because she is an expert on a topic that I think has never been more important than it is right now, and that's burnout. So our conversation today is going to be about boundaries and burnout and entrepreneurial women and the connections between these two that if you're listening to the Driven Woman podcast, you need to know. So welcome, Kate.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited. And we've been sort of going back and forth in the background here. So we've already had parts of the conversation, but I'm excited to get into it for the listeners and make sure they get everything that they need out of it. So I'm ready
all
to dive in.
All that juicy goodness. Yes, mm-hmm. Let's do it. So can we start, Kate, with your own personal history? Because I think the fact that you choose to talk about burnout, and by your own admission, you are obsessed with the topic, like, why? I'm sure everybody's dying to know. So tell us your personal history with burnout and why you're doing what you're doing in the world.
Yes, I'm hashtag obsessed with burnout. I don't think it's going away anytime soon. The more I dig in, the more I'm like, oh, there's another topic that we can touch. There's another thing that we can do here. But my story started out by me being a girl who loves adventure, who likes to, I made a decree when I was living in California that I like to live a life that makes good stories. I like to do things that make good stories. So I did lots of things that made good stories. I left a pre-med program that I had a full scholarship to study acupuncture and Chinese medicine on the other side of the country. So at 1920, I moved from Boston to San Diego to follow my dream. During that time, I had this calling that I needed to go to South America to learn Spanish. I just said I was living in San Diego. So like,
there's plenty of Spanish going on there. I'm like, a California girl, so.
I was a half an hour from Mexico. There was no reason for me to need to go to Argentina, but I had this internal thing that said, you must go to Argentina. So I went, and, you know, 6 weeks later, I was engaged to a Polish man that I met in Buenos Aires.
Of course.
And then I went back to California, finished my degree, moved to Poland. When I got to Poland, I started working in a fertility center. That was my first job because I needed a job. I didn't even know when I was moving if I was going to be able to practice in Poland. I didn't know if my license was valid. My husband didn't even know how to look that up because, like, how do you find that out? It turns out I could, and everything was fine, but no acupuncturist had ever worked in a fertility center in the country before. So I was the first one. As a woman who didn't speak Polish, 24 years old, 25 years old, just showing up being like, here I am. Do you love me yet? You know,
you're my kind of gal.
So I did this really successfully. I ended up opening a private practice a few years later. I made all of my investment back in my first month in practice from opening. So,
and the education that you, I mean, you walked away from an all expenses paid trip through medical school.
Yeah.
And took on like a fuck ton of debt.
$100,000 in debt.
I know people who have gone down this road, and then you moved to a foreign country where the only person you knew was your husband, didn't speak the language, were barely a quarter of a century old, and crushed it.
Crushed it. Like, ended up on Polish TV. I now speak Polish fluently. I ended up on morning shows, evening talk shows, in magazines. I had a 3-month waiting list for my acupuncture practice. I mean, I was killing it. And so I did all the things that the world tells you, you know, if you follow your heart, you'll never feel like you're working a day in your life. If you follow your passion, you'll feel joy all the time. Like, fuck off. It makes me so angry.
It's pretty nauseating, but man, the millennials, the millennial generation, you know, so many boomers talk such smack about them. But I think as a generation, you guys were sold a bill of goods that has turned out to be so toxic and so disabling for so many people that no wonder there are a lot of millennials who still have no idea what they're doing.
Or are disenchanted with the system that you're told, like, if you're just happy, everything will be fine. And I didn't grow up in a financially stable and fluent family. So it's not that they were saying, just go live your life and be happy. They were saying be happy because that was the message of the hour.
Yes.
But I understood. I've been working since I was 14 years old. As soon as before that, illegally, obviously, babysitting and things like that. Right. But as soon as my mother could get that piece of paper in my hand that said I could legally get paid to do something, that piece of paper was in my hands. I remember the day. I've made my own money for as long as I can remember because I needed to. If I wanted new clothes for the school year, like,
they had to come from somewhere.
I had to pay for them. It was just that simple. So I lived this sort of wild life. You know, I did all these big things before 30. And I found myself at 28 years old. I was paying off my student loan faster than any of my American counterparts because I was killing it, even though, you know, in New York, I charge over $100 for an acupuncture session. Mm. In Poland, I could only charge like 27.
So you were working.
I was working
a lot.
I was cranking it out. Right.
So, I got to ask you this, Kate. At that time, did you think there was anything unusual about you or the life that you created? Like,
no,
I know how you are because you are just like me and everyone listening to this right now. We attempt things that other people would be astonished by, and they just shake their head that we even think, and it doesn't even occur to us that we shouldn't do it. We couldn't do it. We just do it. And other people are just amazed. Did you think that what you were doing was noteworthy, exemplary, exceptional in any way?
No. This was just the next
brick to you.
Yeah, it was the next brick in my path. It was the next step that I was going to take. It was the next obvious choice showed itself to me. And then I did it. I knew on a logical level, on an intellectual level, that I wasn't following the norms.
Mm-hmm.
I knew that.
Yeah.
But it didn't. I don't know how something feels out of the norm. When it's your life, it's your life.
Yeah. Well, I'm just thinking that there must have been somebody, parental units or other people who might have wanted a full ride to med school, who told you, girl, you're fucking crazy.
Mm-hmm.
What the hell are you doing?
My father told me I was fucking crazy. When I told my mother was like, follow your heart, do your thing. And my father was like, what the fuck is wrong with you? But yeah. His fear, he had started college and didn't finish. And his fear was that because I was stopping, that I wasn't going to start again, that I was going to get caught up in, you know, because in between leaving BU and starting my acupuncture program, I was bartending, waitressing, you know, and he
thought you'd get trapped there.
Yeah. You're just going to get stuck making them. It was good money, especially at that time.
Yeah.
For me, you know, I was making $200-$300 a night at 18 years old. Like,
you're getting paid to serve drinks? Like, are you kidding me?
Yeah. Really? And it was fun. It was easy. It was a party. It was a good time. And so I think he was afraid that I just wasn't going to continue. As soon as I was back in school again, he was all for it.
Got it.
But there was that moment that my mother looked at me and she said, I trust you to make good decisions. Like, I'm behind you. And my father was like, you're fucking out of your mind.
Yeah. Yeah. I bet they had a few late night arguments between the two of them.
I mean, and then I decided to go to Argentina by myself at, you know, 23. And they were like, what?
It just keeps getting more exciting.
Yeah. They're like, really, Katie? And then I was like, so by the way, at the end of my trip to Argentina, my best friend was getting married in Aruba. My best friend from childhood, who grew up two houses down. I've known forever. We used to sleep in cots side by side in preschool. And so my parents were also invited. So we all met in Aruba. Yes.
Oh, awesome.
So we all met in Aruba at the end of this trip. And I got to Aruba and I looked at my parents and I said, by the way, I'm getting married.
Just slipped that in.
Yeah. To this man that you have never met. And
you can't communicate with. He speaks English, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh,
he had just finished a master's program in Liverpool. So his English was like better than mine. And
well, you are just full of surprises. So you are at the point where you have a successful practice in Poland, doing something that nobody has ever done, not a woman, but nobody in probably a country, I would imagine, in that part of the world, there's acupuncture is probably not as well known, understood, and accepted as it is here in the States.
It was not at the time.
And you were seeing a ton of people because you were not charging US prices. So take us forward from there.
So I'm seeing 200 to 250 people a month. By myself with no receptionist because I didn't know how to run a business. I didn't know what the hell I was doing. And underneath all of it, I'm just going to get real dirty, like right away. I'm just going to dive right in right away. Underneath all of it, I was driven by this idea that unless I was personally responsible for all of my patients' health, I wasn't valuable as a practitioner. And if I wasn't valuable as a practitioner, then I was not valuable as a person. I was chasing my own value in my work. And that was ultimately, there's a lot of factors that went into my burnout, you know, living abroad, speaking a different language every day, being in a country that doesn't suit me very well. There's a lot of factors that go into it. But underneath all of them was this, I'm only good enough. Mm-hmm. If everybody that comes to me gets exactly what they need and exactly what they want faster than they expected it and better than they expected it.
In other words, you were earning your self-esteem one patient at a time.
Yes.
And that is a treadmill going nowhere. Mm-hmm. Going nowhere. But when you're on it, I mean, you're speaking about it very coherently, very persuasively, very passionately, and with some distance, obviously.
This was 10 years ago now.
From that belief, but I know from having come back from the brink of burnout and probably crossing over the line at the time, you can't see that. You can't read the label from inside the bottle. You were just in your way of being. And did you reach a point of no return? Was it fast? Was it slow? Like, how did you finally realize this is not a sustainable lifestyle? Because it's a sustainable mindset.
Yeah, it was a tortoise speed, I'd say. Took me a real long time.
Yeah.
I decided after a couple of years that what was happening wasn't working for me. But the only thing that I could fault at the time was the country. So I blamed Poland as a country.
That makes sense. That works for me. Well, we are always the last on the list of who.
Of course.
Right? Like,
of course.
What do you mean I brought this on myself? What are you talking about?
Well, and I was working with a life coach. I had gone through life coaching training at the time, and I had done all of the internal work. And I was a meditator, and I was doing metta loving kindness meditations every time I was in the grocery store so that people would not be assholes. But I could not control the entire
population.
Even though
they would run their card into you, and you're like, I wish you happiness and the
cash.
I wish you peace.
I wish you. Right. So I'm trying to like meta loving kindness my way through life and it wasn't working. And so I said to my husband, I got to get out of here. It's not working for me here. I got to get out of here. And he happened at that time to be working for someone who was based in a different country. And that guy was called back to his own country to work. So he didn't have to, he was commuting country to country, this man at the time. And he went back to his home, was able to work in this job in his home in a different company. And he said to my husband, well, listen, if you want to come, I want you. So if you want it, then let's go.
He could step into his role.
No, no, I'll bring you to this new country with me. If you want out of Poland.
What are we talking about?
We moved to the Czech Republic.
Okay.
So just south of Poland, borders Poland. I mean, you know, it's really right there. So I'm thinking to myself, great, I'm going Eastern Europe to Eastern Europe. But don't tell anybody in the Czech Republic I said that. The Czech Republic is very much Central Europe, I understand. So we ended up living there for 6 years. When I started working there, I was limited to how many hours I could work because I was not working in my own office anymore. So it wasn't just me in an office. I was working in an office where other people's schedules mattered too.
I was like, and you weren't the boss anymore, per se.
I wasn't the boss anymore. I was still an independent contractor.
But depending on others' preferences and schedules and availability.
Which was great for me because while I thought that I was from Boston and had great boundaries, I did not. So these were automatic boundaries that were given to me. Like, you can only work these hours because these are the only hours that are available. Right. So it was great.
You never had to learn to say no at that point.
No.
Because you were like hemmed in by other people's choices that you couldn't negotiate.
It was great. I loved it. I was like, wonderful. And so I did this for a few years. And after a few years, I realized I was still tired. I was getting cranky again. And it still wasn't working. And I was thinking, I'm a stress management expert. By design, right? Acupuncturists, all acupuncturists are because it's
I have had successful acupuncture. And as a matter of fact, after a car accident, I was on very high doses of opioid pain medication and I was able to successfully wean off with weekly acupuncture treatments. Yeah. It took 2 years.
Yeah. Yep.
But it was worth it.
Yeah.
So I'm a believer. I'm a believer. But you were like, oh my God, you must have had some fraudy feelings around that time because you're like, what the hell? I'm a stress management expert. I do compassion meditation for assholes in the supermarket.
Yes.
And I'm losing my mind.
And I'm exhausted and I'm angry.
Burned out.
And I didn't know that I was burned out yet. And this had now been going on. By the time I got to this point, this had been going on for like 6 years.
You got stamina.
Right. But I was young, thank God.
Yeah.
But I was in this for a long time.
Yes.
And then I read an article one day about burnout and my whole body just flushed with recognition. And I was like, oh shit. At that time, I'm a nerd, right? So as soon as I start reading something, I want
to
read all the
dive in head first and
get me all the research. And I want the research. I don't want the book written by somebody like me.
No.
Right. I wanted the research. So
evidence-based research.
I want the science. So my husband at the time was doing a degree, like a post-grad degree at Oxford. And so I said, great, I have access to the university libraries. So I downloaded every single paper that said the word burnout in it. And I read them all, of course, over the course of about 3 or 4 months.
Of course you did.
And during that time, what I learned was that burnout was the company's fault. Burnout was the hospital's fault. You know, you mentioned earlier that you've seen this happen in physicians and nurses and hospital settings. That's where and how it was originally studied.
Yes.
So I just kept reading that, you know, it was the hospital's fault and it was the company's fault. And I was sitting there going, but I'm the company.
Yeah.
I'm the boss. And I would, at the time I was taking, you know, 5 to 8 weeks off a year for vacation, European style. So it's not like I didn't think I was overworking, you know, I was only working probably 25 hours a week. So, you know, I wasn't killing myself physically. So what's the issue here? So I had to start doing my own research and I had to start digging into my life a little bit differently. And this is where all of the work that I do now comes from, because when I read all the shit that I could read on burnout, I didn't find myself in it. And I said, well, that's not me. So then where do I fit into this?
Right. If it's not the system that you're a part of, like, you know, my background, I was a psychotherapist for many years. I'm trained as a licensed clinical social worker. I come from a healthcare family. I'm married to a physician. My sister's a nurse. Yeah. Everybody in our family comes from healthcare, and you see a lot of burnout in healthcare because healthcare attracts passionate people who want to help others. And I think burnout is an occupational hazard in healthcare for just about everybody,
which is awful.
But it is, of course it is. But what's also true, what you're saying, is that the traditional way of looking at burnout is that it's a systemic issue because of the institutions that we've created, the indoctrination for doctors, for nurses, for teachers, for social workers, for anybody who's a helper, healer, acupuncturist, massage therapist, physical therapist, occupational
therapist.
Mother. Yeah. Anybody who does anything for anybody other than themselves. Veterinarians, people who care for animals,
vets,
hospice workers,
huge number for now. Yeah.
Anybody who actually gives a shit about anybody other than them and acts on that is at risk. But we can't change those systems. And you were self-employed. Mm-hmm. And I'm married to a European. I know their standards for time off. Mm-hmm. Americans are like, what?
Yeah.
You get 6 to 8 weeks of paid vacation time per year. You get a year off to have a kid. Oh my God.
Yeah.
So you were well under your previous work life limits and yet still in it. That's fascinating. That's a whole different view on burnout.
Which is why I had to keep digging, right? Because I do agree with the fact that people that are stuck in hospitals and corporate settings, oftentimes the company, the settings, the institution, the systems are at fault. And I think there are people working to change them. And I think they do need to change. However, that does not change the fact that that was not my scenario.
You had to be different, didn't you?
I just had to be. I just had to be.
A long track record.
I do.
Different,
I do.
And you just decided to stick with it.
I do. So
what did you discover? Like, you knew you were on to something, but the deeper you dove, the more you realized, I get what they're saying and I resonate with it, but that's not me in my circumstances.
So I started to think about how we look at Chinese medicine, energy and energy exchange, and the energy of being a healer, in which you are technically a vessel. You're not supposed to generate or use your own energy to participate in the healing process. You're basically supposed to get out of the way.
Like a conduit. It flows through you.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So I started thinking about that, and I started thinking about how and why that energy would be stopped in my body instead of allowing it to pass through, how and why it would be stopped. And what I noticed was I'm super fucking judgmental.
No.
Yeah. Unfortunately. Right. I started noticing this, and I started really paying attention to the moments where I was abandoning my own energy and inserting my energy into other people's business, basically, that they weren't really asking me for. But I was in, you know, savior martyr mode. So I was like, I'm going to go fix this situation for everybody. So I'm the girl that will always hold the door open behind me, even if, you know, when there's somebody walking in behind you and they're like two steps too far back for it to be comfortable for you to open the door.
Yes.
But you have to decide what you're going to do.
Yeah. And while you're deciding, should I or shouldn't I, now you've been holding it for so long, you have to keep holding it.
Right. So you decide to hold it. Like I don't ever have to make that decision. I'm always the girl that's going to hold the door.
That's your default mode.
That's my default mode. That's what I learned from my parents, consideration for other people. You know, I always put my shopping cart back into the stalls, you know, in order, in the right row and all of those things.
Even when there's no cars or pedestrians coming.
Doesn't matter.
You wait for the little green man.
Right. Exactly. Not in New York City, because in New York, you just mess everything up when you do
you'll
that.
Get slaughtered.
You've got to go with the flow. So whatever the flow is, I'm going to go with it.
Mm-hmm. But you're a rule follower. And a respecter of the systems.
Yes.
And the authority.
And I'm here to help other people and be useful. So I'm going to hold the door. But my Boston will come out if you walk right past me and do not say thank you. I am going
I see where the judgy part can work its way in.
I'm going to be like, you're welcome.
You won't say it in your outside voice. Right?
Oh, yes, I would.
Oh, I'm thinking it's your thought bubble.
Oh,
you're
no.
Like, you're like, excuse me.
Oh, no, I'll say it out loud. Mm. Not anymore. This was, you know, my previous lifetime. Mm. But no, I would say it out loud because I decided that there were these rules that people were supposed to be following.
And
I did this extra thing. I did this extra thing for you. And now you're supposed to give it back to me so that we both feel good.
Now you owe me, bitch, whether you know it or not. Whether
exactly.
you even wanted what I just did for you.
And that is what seals the deal at the end of the day. So I started paying attention to how often I'm abandoning my own energy, my own needs, my own wants, desires, needs, preferences to quote unquote benefit somebody else, because you don't actually know if it benefits somebody else because you didn't friggin' ask them, because you're just deciding in your own damn head. It's wicked.
Because you know best.
Yes, it's very arrogant.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So I'm noticing this about myself. I'm like, holy shit, you're deciding things for other people. You're being really arrogant. And then you're being judgmental when they don't follow your rules. But nobody sees these rules. Like, they're not on a ticker going
across
your forehead.
Nobody signed up for that shit, including you, which, Kate, I think is the most fascinating thing of all, is that you didn't technically sign up for this mindset either.
I inherited it.
This like modus operandi, your prime directive.
Right.
Is to do unto others and then expect them to be grateful. And when they're not, you have resentment. Resentment is so insidious and so that erodes you from the inside out.
And
like
it's my favorite emotion now.
I love to talk about resentment because people are like, oh, I don't have any resentment. I'm like, give me some time. I'll prove to you what you do.
Some time. I need about 45 seconds.
Yes.
I'll find it. Don't worry.
It won't be painless, but it will be fast.
Exactly. So I started noticing this, and I started noticing moments like I would be on the tram because I'm in Prague, right? I'm living in Prague.
Yeah.
Everybody rides the tram. I'm on the tram and it's full and it's the morning. And there's somebody sitting in the seat that's designated for older women, pregnant women, you know, people in need, whatever. And they're sitting in the seat and they look physically healthy to me. So I'm already judging them that they're sitting in the seat they're not supposed to be sitting in, because that seat is meant for other people. And
they're not following the rules.
They're not following the rules. And there's an old woman on the sidewalk and she's about to get on the tram. And I am already, my energy is already with that old woman. I have abandoned myself completely. Somebody could have pickpocketed me. I would not have known, because my energy was totally somewhere else. Right. When you do these things, you abandon yourself first and foremost.
This is very unique to your teaching, your coaching, your method, which we'll get into in a minute, is that you, because I talk a lot about boundaries.
Yeah.
And I think about bandwidth, boundaries, burnout as being on this continuum. Mm. But the way you talk about it that just had me like, I have to meet her. I have to interview her. She has to be part of my life, is that you actually see it as self-abandonment. And I think that's such a provocative term that it shakes us out of our nonsense into thinking that we're being the good guys with this way of thinking.
Right.
We're not. We're being assholes. We just don't realize it.
We're being assholes.
And to ourselves and others.
Yes. And we're abandoning ourselves in the process. So I'm already with this old woman. She gets on the tram and I'm going to be the person that tells the person that's sitting in the seat that she should be sitting in to get up. And I will literally ask people, like, could you get up so she could sit down, please?
And you're all of like, what, 5'4"?
Yeah.
I wish I could have been. I'm like almost 6 feet tall. I don't even have to tell people to get up. I just look at them and they're like, I'm out of here. You know, but when a smaller woman who's like very determined does it, I'm like, you are my queen. Like, that's awesome.
So, but it's not awesome. It's shitty because first of all, what am I doing? I'm judging the person who's sitting in the seat. First of all, for not following the rules I think they should follow. Second of all, I'm assuming a level of health that I shouldn't assume, because unhealthy people walk around in healthy looking bodies.
There's all kinds of invisible illnesses. And maybe the old lady would feel better about herself if she stands.
Right. So first I'm judging the person sitting down. Then I'm judging the old lady and her abilities. And I'm judging her ability to use her voice. So I'm becoming a voice for her. It's like judgment upon judgment upon judgment upon judgment upon. It's like layers. It's like a layer cake of judgment.
A parfait.
It's a parfait. It's a judgment parfait. So, and after these women said to me multiple times, oh, I'm just going one stop. I'm okay. something started to click. And I'm thinking, first of all, this woman's like 83. She's been riding these trams by herself probably for 77 years.
And standing up is probably why she's still in good shape.
Yeah. So like, think about it. I'm pretty sure if she wants to sit down, she's had enough practice getting on this tram to be like, by the way, mama needs to sit.
And she probably speaks the language better than you do at this point on top of all that.
Likely.
So like little light bulbs are like your head's starting to look off. Like a Christmas tree.
Yes.
Bing, 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 bing. All these realizations.
Yes.
But I know it still takes time. Like well, it's like I think about self-awareness coming to us in waves. Mm. And then another wave hits you and another wave hits you. But, you know, I've been at the beach most of my life. You just dry off, change out of your swimsuit.
And you can't control how fast the waves come.
Well, and it usually takes something painful before we say, okay, that's enough. I get it.
Yeah. Yeah.
This has to
Exactly. So during this time, I'm digging through all this research and I'm thinking about myself and how I don't fit into this research. And I'm watching my behaviors, really paying attention to when I'm abandoning my energy. I'm really, really watching that in the world. And I came back to a story that my old roommate told me, a roommate that I had in California. She's an amazing international lawyer now. She's an incredible woman. I just am so proud to know her. And she told me a story one day that she doesn't remember telling me about a man who told her a story. And he said, I want you to imagine that the whole universe is covered by a net. There's a net just around all of us. Mm-hmm. And above every single human, there's a knot. Just one knot, like a sailor's knot above your head that's a part of the net. And your job while you're here is to maintain the integrity of your knot. Because when you do so, that first of all, that's your job. Second of all, it makes it easier for all of the people around you to maintain the integrity of their knot. And so this story popped into my head. I hadn't lived with her in a decade, but this story popped into my head and I thought, oh my God, that's it. I'm not taking care of my own knot. When I'm abandoning myself, this is where the abandonment word came from. When I'm leaving to go tell the person sitting down for the old woman that needs a seat, when I'm doing that, what I'm doing is walking away from my knot. I'm abandoning my knot. And the people that are around me now have to work double time to make sure this part of the net doesn't collapse because I'm being nice. And this is when I learned.
I love metaphors so much. And you are a world-class storyteller because human beings think in pictures, and especially creative, driven, expressive women like you and I think in pictures. Mm. And I'm picturing the whole world and this knot. And I remember wearing fishnets back in the day after I saw Rocky Horror Picture Show. I had to see how they looked on a female. But when you are pulling on one part of a net makes the other parts get out of alignment. So it doesn't look right. And you not holding on to your own knot and only focusing on your knot, you're literally compromising the integrity of the entire net in some small way. And if other people are doing what you're doing, and of course, we're not the only ones in the whole world who have done this sort of thing, it literally warps the net for humanity. That's such a brilliant metaphor. I love that.
Yes. I just got full body chills because that's exactly it. And this is the moment that I realized that self-care wasn't selfish.
Mm.
That was the moment.
And that all the things that you think you're doing for others, not only are you not doing them for others, you're doing them for you, but you're doing them in a way that's the antithesis of your goal. Intention, your goal to be helpful, to serve. You are actually interfering with their ability to tend their knot.
To their knot. Exactly.
Wow.
Right?
Did your head explode when you got that, like mine just kind of did?
My head exploded. And I started talking about this 4 years ago, before the burnout, before the, you know, all, and I just thought I was being so revolutionary and nobody gave a shit.
Well,
nobody cared, you know, I couldn't get it out there.
It is well, the thing is that you are a thought leader. You are. And thought leaders can tap into the collective consciousness. or unconscious. I never know which one it is, but they're always ahead of most people. You know how the bell curve, there's the early adopters, and it takes most people a while to catch on to something. They have to hear it and hear it and hear it. So you must have been speaking it for a long while before it started to feel like people got it and it resonated. And all this time, you must have also been making changes in your own life with respect to boundaries. And
exactly. So the not informed, the my whole entire approach to boundaries, because I started thinking, well, okay, if I shouldn't abandon myself to go take care of other people's knots, that those are the moments that create the most resentment, right? Because you abandon yourself, you go take care of someone else's knot, and then you want them to say thank you, want them to be grateful, you want them to live life the way that you think they should be living it, because you did this thing for them, which means that they should respond in kind according to these rules that you created that you may or may not have said out loud.
Right, which there no contract exists for this that anyone has ever signed. Yeah, everybody's obligated.
Yes. Right. So you create all this resentment. You're abandoning yourself. And this is a part of boundaries that no one ever talks about. Everyone is constantly saying, you need to be more assertive. You need to learn how to say no. I was assertive as fuck. Assertiveness was not my
Especially
issue.
Especially with those people on the tram. You're like, it isn't about assertiveness. It's literal. And, you know, Kate, we hear people use expressions like stay in your own lane and that sort of stuff. And that always reminds me of a bowling alley, but literally tending your own knot means you're not just doing something physical,
right?
You're also doing something metaphysical.
Yes.
And your mind and your emotions and your behavior are all sort of in alignment. One of the questions I've been wanting to ask you is, because we're talking about resentment, and I love talking about resentment.
Me too.
And because I think it's like battery acid. It just erodes all relationships and even our relationship with ourselves. But what emotion do you think we need to cultivate in order to have healthy boundaries? Because if we're not tending our own knot, we're trying to fix everybody else's knot, we're feeling a lot of resentment. What emotion can we intentionally cultivate that actually starts to lead us away from that and into a better, healthier alignment with ourselves and other people?
So for me, my focus isn't on the opposite emotion. My focus is on, let's use the resentment. Resentment is my number one emotion. I have a mini course on it because I think it's that important. Well, I don't want people to focus on engendering a different emotion. I want people to face the resentment, look at it, really take the time to look at it and ask it questions. Find out, because you will find resentment in every place that your boundaries have been crossed, but you will find it in the places that you have overstepped your own boundaries and the places where people have overstepped yours. You will find when you start picking at it that most of the time it's you stepping out. And not the other way around.
It's when, like, the work that I do with a lot of entrepreneurs when they say they need to manage their time better. I'm like, no, darling, you need to manage your energy and your obligations.
Yes.
And most of the time, what they call distractions and interruptions are actually not other people intruding on them. It's them volunteering. And they're doing it so unconsciously and so habitually.
Because we're taught.
Because we're taught it's feminine conditioning, it's cultural conditioning, it's all those things. And it's our own, even our female hormones are getting in on the act.
Yep.
But it's the notion that, well, I have to do this for some, like,
Do you?
No.
But do you?
But I feel like I do. I'm like, you're feeling a thought. Let's get down to the thought.
Yes.
Of course there's resentment because we feel we're volunteering for things that we don't want to volunteer for.
Like, and then we're not getting the payout.
Right.
We're not getting the correct payout that we think that we deserve.
So you're not a martyr.
Right.
And that's, I think that's so hard. I mean, I think a woman has to really be, and men too, but I work with women. They have to be in the just right place where they're like, yeah, I wasn't recruited. I volunteered without pay indefinitely.
Yes.
And when they can say, I understand why now. I'm not angry with myself.
Exactly.
I don't feel ashamed.
Right.
it's like, oh, of course that's what you did. That's what we all do.
Yeah. This is why I like the knot. Because it's just a picture. It's just a story. Yes. There's no judgment to it. It's just, please stop abandoning yourself so that we can all like maintain our own shit around here. You're not actually helping me by stepping into my zone.
Yeah. And I agree. I agree with you also, Kate, that when you're feeling resentment, most of the time you're not admitting that you're feeling resentment. When you finally get to the point where you're like, it's like, no, it's not frustration. It's resentment. Yeah. Subtle, but important difference.
Yeah.
And once you admit to that, then it's like, well, I need to stop feeling that.
No,
maybe not.
No, I don't want you to stop feeling it at all. I really, resentment is my number one business tool to know exactly where my boundaries need to be and to course correct in time, because boundaries are fluid things. They're different with different people. So you can't just like make a rule and then follow it forever, because you're going to make exceptions to your rule because you're going to want to for some people, because you're going to like them better than other people. And that's just the way it goes. And it's not, that's okay. You're allowed to change where the boundary line is, but you have to know where it is. You have to be able to follow it, and you follow it with resentment. You watch it happen. As soon as it starts building up,
it's making the unconscious conscious.
Yes.
Because I think when we haven't reached a point where we actually know what it is that we're feeling, we name it and claim it, and we realize that it actually, once we become aware, it is a choice.
Right.
And you can keep on choosing it if you want to.
Yes.
But here are some other choices, some other options that you might want to choose. Then you have agency, and you're not just unconsciously back on that treadmill that you were on for so many years, like so many of us have been on for so many years.
Exactly. And you start, you look at the resentment, and you start by asking, do I really need to do this job? Does this belong to me? Is this my knot? That's the first question. The first question is this my knot? Let's find that out first, and then we can go through the rest.
Oh my goodness. I'm thinking about my clients and how a lot of what I talk about with boundaries has to do with boundaries with clients and with money and in business, because we have boundaries in our personal life, but we also have them in our business life with scope creep and over delivering and, you know, freebies and the friends and family discount and all of that stuff. And I know one of the things that you talk about in your work and on your podcast is about inner boundaries. Because I think when people first start learning about boundaries, they often say, well, does that mean I just need to like close the door and lock it? I'm like,
no.
Really more mindset. I mean, if the mindset is right, then the actions will naturally follow. And if you only do the actions, you're going to have more conflict inside than ever. And you're just going to default back to what you've always been doing. So can you tell us a little bit about how you look at inner boundaries?
So the inner boundaries to me is leaving your energy at your knot. In the simplest of explanations, leave your energy with your knot. Don't abandon yourself. Don't abandon your knot. When you find that you are, like you're saying, over-offering, over-giving, you're usually doing it because you're afraid somebody's not going to like you, or somebody's going to feel like they didn't get enough value out of what you gave, or that, you know,
you're going to be rejected.
You're going to be rejected. No. Yes, exactly. Yeah. And somebody's going to think that along the road, no matter what you do.
True that.
So like, good luck trying to avoid it. It doesn't matter what you do. Somebody is going to feel like that at some point, and is going to have nothing to do with you. And you're still going to feel like crap about it, because that's the human condition.
So it's a race to, it's a race to the bottom.
Yeah.
When you try to course correct for any possible thing that you might do that someone else will object to.
Right.
And that's going to bring a lot of resentment. For sure.
This is people pleasing, right? So to me, like, your inner boundaries are avoiding people pleasing just for the sake of. And that means asking more questions, saying more things out loud, asking for clarity over and over and over again. What exactly are your expectations here? Can we make a list? Do I need to be a part of this? Can it be delegated to someone else? We need software to help with this problem. Is there software that you can afford right now? There's, you know, there's more questions, more clarity, because if you don't stop leaving your knot behind, it will fray to the point that it will take you way too long to put back together. Mine burnt to a crisp. It has taken me a long time to reinstate the integrity of my knot.
As I imagine it would. I mean, it's when I first heard about you and saw the name of your podcast, Fried, the Burnout Podcast. And then I went to my podcast player and I saw the show art of a frying pan. I mean, it's like, yep. But I think, you know, you have to be ready to see yourself and your role in the problem.
Yeah.
It's one of the, people ask about your pet peeves. One of my peeves is the victim complex. Because as long as we're seeing burnout as something that's happening to us, breached boundaries as something that's happening to us, we're never going to be able to find the knot or understand that it is up to us to stay in alignment with it. So are you still an acupuncturist at this point?
I am still an acupuncturist. I have an office in New York City right now. I'm doing it less. So one of the things I realized through my healing process and burnout is that I can't do the same thing every day. I just can't do the same job every day.
Too much repetition.
Yeah. And I don't care that the patients are all different and that they all come in with different problems. That's not what adjusts the monotony for me.
Okay.
So I do a small amount of work with acupuncture. I still love acupuncture. I use acupuncture to treat burnout because we can improve blood flow to the brain, increase dopamine to the brain. We can, you know, reset the nervous system. There's so many benefits to acupuncture for burnout through acupuncture. So I use it. I'm still under the same burnout umbrella. It's just I don't do it every day because I just learned that about myself during the process that I can't. When we were speaking earlier, you asked if it's possible that I have ADHD traits and
yes. Yeah. And I think if you do have ADHD traits, the longer I'm working with women like us, Kate, the more I'm realizing that what makes it ADHD, what makes it a problem, a diagnosis, a disorder is impairment.
Yeah.
When we have workarounds, when we have systems, when we have strategies, when we have supports, and when we have a mindset that is more empowered, it's possible for some of us that it never reaches the level of impairment. So we actually get to leverage these traits to our benefit, but we absolutely need self-awareness. And you, this has all been about your journey of self-awareness, of recognizing who you are, how you are, how you need to think, how you need to structure and organize your life so that you continue to enjoy it and actually help people.
Yes.
So tell us before we wrap what you are doing now in addition to your practice. I've mentioned the podcast and we will certainly link to it in the show notes. But what are your other ways of helping people besides the work you do in your practice?
So outside of acupuncture and Fried the Burnout Podcast, I'm doing a lot of big stage speaking, which is not stage right now because we're online, but big stage speaking, which I really adore. I like big crowds. I can't wait until things open again and I can be in front of a couple thousand people. I want, you know, I like that. So that's been really fun for me. I do one-on-one coaching work with people. So that is the bulk of my work at the moment. That's what I spend the most time on. I think eventually it will turn into more membership/group type programs, but we're in this phase right now. So this is where we are right now. It's a lot of one-on-one work. I do have online courses. The most popular one is a $32 resentment journal. It's like the most powerful thing I think I've ever created. And it's just this little thing that's as cheap as it can possibly be. So everybody can use it because I think if we just tap into this, we save ourselves so much of the energy that we are being drained of day by day, by day, by day, by day. So that's a really fun part. I also have a book called The Bounce Back Ability Factor. I'm pointing to it.
We'll make sure we link to that and to the resentment journal. I think the resentment journal is a brilliant idea. It's affordable and it's naming the specific emotion that is behind so much unnecessary suffering.
Yes.
There's so much shame around it. And so I think being able to journal around it and kind of have a conversation, as you say, with the resentment, that in and of itself has got to be totally transformative.
coaching style too, right? So there's questions involved. When you get to the resentment, these are the questions you ask. These are the answers that come up. This is what you do with them. When you have to have a conversation out loud about boundaries, if that's the answer that you get to is that you need a conversation, this is how you have the conversation. This is how you structure it. You know, so it's step by step by step. You're not alone in figuring out what to do with this. It's not just writing about it. It's really transforming it so that it's useful for you, which I love.
I am so glad to have this conversation with you and to be able to share it with so many people. You think in a wonderful way, and I think you have identified something through your own personal experience that, frankly, Kate, you could have kept it to yourself. You could have kept it to yourself and just made some adjustments in your life and thought, whew, dodged a bullet and gone on your merry way. But what you've done instead is turned it into meaning, message, manifesto, even a mission, if you will, that is so, so needed in the world now more than ever. I will make sure that everybody listening will be able to get to you through linking to your Instagram, linking to your podcast, Fried the Burnout Podcast, linking to your book, The Resentment Journal, and all the wonderful ways that they can get their hands on more of you. And as for us, I'm going to keep stalking you because I need you in my life. You're amazing.
Ditto. Thank you so much for having me.
You're so welcome. Hey, it's Diane. Can I be honest with you? At the beginning of each new year, I always told myself, this is the year I'm going to get my habits dialed in. This is the year I'm going to be crystal clear about my goals and I'm going to crush them. This is the year I'm going to get my shit together on every level and I'm going to do it all by myself. Been there, done that, got a whole stack of t-shirts. But you know, it wasn't until I started working with my own coach that I realized what a difference it makes to have guidance, support, and accountability from someone who's not only like-minded, but like-brained. Yeah, I'm talking about another driven woman, entrepreneur, who also has ADHD and has got it going on. I have two openings in my signature one-on-one 12-week coaching program, and one of them might have your name on it. There's a link to a free consult with me in the show notes if you think this might be the year that you really get serious and go all in on an ADHD-friendly business and life. While you're thinking about that, have a listen to what one of my client's success stories has to say about the difference it made to work with me.
Well, one thing that you helped give me insight on is how sensitive I am, and because I'm an empath, being in traffic and loud noises throughout the day, just getting to home, that alone was really draining. And now working from home, it's like I'm able to conserve that energy. And working with the parents to really teach them kind of concepts and bigger things that have a bigger impact. Because one thing that you also mentioned was because I was working so much, I didn't have time to do the things that were meaningful to me. And that included learning, getting into the grind. You kind of just like, okay, well, I'm just going to do instead of really stepping back and looking at, yeah, more strategic ways to have, you know, a longer term plan.
You've been listening to the Driven Woman Podcast with Diane Wingert. Want more straight talk and strategy each week that will take you from spinning to winning? Don't forget to hit subscribe in your podcast player so you won't miss a single episode. Then head on over to the Driven Woman free and private Facebook group community. See you there.